Hey there, foreigners! This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious leaders. I'm just starting to realize that I love interviewing second-time founders, the founders who are in the beginning stages of a new company, but they already have a success behind them. Today's guest is one such person, and he is Munir Usman. Munir is originally from Pakistan, and he started a services company called Pi Labs from his home country. He scaled it successfully and sold it before he moved to Bay Area to start his second company called Remote Interview. In today's episode, Munir talks in depth about how he started, scaled, and sold his services business and why he decided to do a second company and many more. Here is my episode and interview with Munir. Munir, welcome to Breaking the Borders podcast.
Thanks, Rohit. My pleasure to be here.
So give us a brief intro to yourself. If I was in a flight sitting next to you, how would you introduce yourself?
Okay, so I would say I'm a technology entrepreneur, but before that, I am a programmer and I run a tech startup in the Bay Area. I recently moved to US from Pakistan, and this is my second company. I'm doing it here and enjoying my new American life.
So today's focus is more around your first company, Pi Labs, that you started. But you mentioned you were a programmer first. So tell us about what life was like before your first startup, Pi Labs. What were you doing at that time?
Oh, so I was really passionate about programming, and I was like, that was my full-time hobby. Like, I was participating in different kind of programming competition all the time, and I was doing so many freelance projects to earn money on site while I was at university. But I knew programming before my bachelor's in computer science.
You were working full-time at a company doing parsing XML code, right?
Yes, actually, that was after I graduated.
Okay.
I did the graduation. My original degree was in telecommunication engineering, electrical and telecommunication engineering, but I was not interested in that. I made a mistake. And I didn't have much flexibility to change my focus because I had to pay more and I didn't have money that time. So what I did, I was like bunking my electrical engineering classes, and I was sitting and hanging out with CS students and teachers. So I was more active in the computer science department than my original electrical department.
So you couldn't take computer science because it was more expensive?
No. I was enrolled in electrical engineering, and there was no concept. There's no concept of electives, or I could not change it. Otherwise, I would have to do the pay them more, like significant money more, like 25% of my total fee. I was already on the 100% scholarship. I didn't have money. So I decided to just get enough GPA to get the degree and spend my whole time in the CS department, sitting, attending the lectures or doing the freelancing or participating in different programming competitions. So that's
when
I first came
to the US in 2008, when I was doing my master's, I learned that undergrads don't have to choose their major until this junior year. Right, which is when you have a clearer picture about what you want to do. But back in Pakistan, where you grew up, I guess that was not the case, right?
Same was that is still not the case.
Still not the case.
Yeah, it's a big issue. I think they should do something about it because you don't know what you want to do, right?
Yeah. So you ended up choosing a field. Like I did that too. I got a biotech major because I thought it was cool. But 1 year into my biotech major undergrad, I hated it, and it took me a lot of time to pivot out of it or come out of it. But you were in the same situation, so you took electrical engineering without learning what it is.
Actually, I was already passionate about programming, and I already knew it. Like I had won some competitions and all that before getting enrolled in the university. But at that time, the job market for the computer science graduates was not good. It was like just after dot-com bubble, like I'm talking about 2003 in Pakistan. And everybody was against the idea. Like, don't study computer science. You already know programming. Study telecommunication engineering. It's the next big thing. I knew nothing about telecommunication engineering, but due to some financial pressure from my surrounding, I decided to choose a safe path. But I regret it like every day. But then I said, okay, instead of crying every day, I can do something about it. So I said, okay, I'll just take classes on my own and learn it, follow my passion. Yeah.
Which city did you grow up in?
I was born and grew up in Karachi.
Karachi. And you also mentioned earlier that you saw your dad go through several cash flow issues as a businessman when you were growing up.
Yeah, he was a businessman, but he always had cash flow issues. I think he was not very good in cash flow management. So I understood the importance of... So when I was starting my first business, my goal from day one to have enough cash to survive. So I had a rule that I should at least have like minimum 6 months of all my expenses in my bank account. I would never touch it. So I ended up having more than 12 months of cash flow all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I never ran into cash flow problems. So that was, I think, best thing.
So what was your full-time job and what were you doing for them just before you quit?
So after I graduated, I applied to a company, Avanza Solutions. They make software for banking. Why did I pick this company? Because they were offering me international traveling, mm-hmm. and I wanted to travel. And I thought that was the only company that was offering me, like, that was my negotiation point. I didn't negotiate on salary. I said, okay, I'm gonna fly. So they said, okay, you will be traveling next month. Mm-hmm. I said, perfect. I accept the offer. So I was building software. I was building an enterprise middleware. So you can say, like, I was making a software to connect ATMs and internet banking and SMS banking with the core banking solution. So I was building a bridge between all these banking channels. So that was my job.
And when you're doing that, you were coming up with innovative ideas which were not accepted well.
I'm glad it happened. Because I was like, I was supposed to work in a bank in Middle East. And the environment was not very tech friendly. They were all bankers. And my team lead was not very inspiring. So we had a technical challenge. So we had to follow some standard and parse a very complex XML. And I came up with a more efficient solution. But he was like, no, do it what we have been doing. Like, don't come up with a new solution. And you know nothing. You just graduated and this and that. But I knew that my solution was more efficient. And I was trying to prove it like mathematically and doing some tests, but he was not able to listen. And I was so frustrated. And he was kind of like, I felt very insulted, not because he didn't allow me to do it, but because he was not even listening. And so I decided, okay, this is not my where I want to spend time with.
But financially, it was very good time for you, right? So you had to take a significant pay cut. You mentioned in our pre-interview that you were making more than $2,500 a month during that time in your full-time job.
Yeah, and average salary in Pakistan was like, for a fresh software developer, was around $300 per month. And I was making a lot more than that. And I was living a very good life in Bahrain and Dubai. And I was traveling like few times a month. It was a good job in terms of lifestyle, but it was very frustrating intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So after you had this incident with your team lead at that time, what did you do? What was the 1 month following that?
So I had two options. I could have solved this issue. Mm-hmm. I could have approached the hired management and maybe changed the team or something like that. But I unconsciously or subconsciously, I was using this opportunity as a push to leave the job because I was not enjoying the environment. The 9-to-5 environment and the, like, very strict, like, in a corporate structure, and I didn't have any freedom to do that. So I wanted to leave because there was some hype, like, my senior at my university, he was starting a company at that time, and I was very inspired from him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, he is doing it, and he has balls to do it. Like, why am I not doing it? And I was scared to leave a job, and because I was earning first time in my life, and I didn't have a very financially good background, so it was hard. But I used this opportunity as a push to make a decision. I could have solved this problem. I could have got a better team, mm-hmm. but I decided to not to do it. It was all unconscious.
Yeah.
When I decided to resign, all my friends were like, "You are not brave enough to solve this problem. You are running away from the problem." And I was like, "Yeah, maybe I'm running away from the problem." But now I realized that I was not running away from the problem. I was actually use it as an opportunity to leave.
What did your dad say?
Oh, my dad said, I told them that I'm gonna join a startup. I'm getting a huge pay cut, and they were upset. But they said, okay, who's gonna like? And I said, and they said, why? I said, I wanna start my own company eventually. And they said, who's gonna invest? I said, don't worry, you won't invest. I'll do it. Okay, then they say, okay, do it, whatever you want, as long as you are being responsible, because I have some financial responsibilities to support my family. And I was like ensuring, I was like, I have enough savings to support them. And if something happens, I can go back to the job. Yeah. So I assured them, and they were okay. I think they didn't.
Your dad's biggest worry was that he would have to invest in your company to sustain it. But when you assured him that it won't happen,
he was concerned that I would ask him money, and I knew he didn't have money, so I would not do it anyway. But he was concerned that but more than that, my mother was concerned that I would not be able to support my family. Because my father was sick at that time. He was not earning a lot. So it was my responsibility to do that. And that was the reason I chose telecommunication or electrical engineering over computer science, because I had some financial responsibilities. But I assured them that, don't worry, this will not affect you. I will manage it.
What was the pay cut you took?
A lot. So I went back to $350 per month from $2,500. But I had savings of $700. And the first thing I did is to buy a laptop, because I didn't have my own computer at that time. Mm-hmm. So I had to return my computer to my company. I bought the laptop for $600, Dell Inspiron. It was Dell Vesper or something. I still remember. Yeah. I went back to $350 per month job again. And went back to Karachi. And it was not my own startup. It was my friend's startup. I was CTO there. I didn't have any equity or anything, partnership or anything. But it was just a way to learn the startup world.
What was it called?
It was called Nuvica.
Nuvica.
He got funding from some Canadian investor.
Was it a promise of funding or actual funding?
It was a promise of funding. It was just before the financial crisis of 2007.
But before we go into the financial crisis, the promise was very good, right? So what was the Canadian company going to invest?
I think they promised to invest, I think, around $150,000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And my friend assured me that we have more than enough money to survive, and like we can hire. And I was like naive at that time. I was hiring people with his permission, because he was the CEO. Mm-hmm. And because we were like happy that we have money to spend and grow the team. And I was excited. Oh, wow, I'm going to lead the team. Mm-hmm. Because I was coming from a job where my boss was very controlling. Mm-hmm. So I had like a sense of freedom and all that. But then something happened. The market went down. And then I got the news from my... And my CEO didn't tell me, actually, that things are not doing well. Mm-hmm. We were expecting a salary. And I said...
Sorry, you cut off for a little bit.
And we are...
Munir, sorry, you cut off there for a little bit. Can you repeat what you just said? So the financial meltdown came, and your partner didn't inform you anything. Then what happened?
Yeah, he didn't inform me. He didn't inform anybody, because he was very concerned, ashamed or whatever. And he was not able to pay the salary for a whole month. And we were waiting. And I made so many promises to my new hires, and it was very embarrassing.
How many people did you hire?
I think we were like 8 people.
Yeah, all crazy. Engineers.
8 of them were engineers. One was designer and one was HR. Yeah, we had an HR manager. Like, can you imagine, like, in first 2 months? Like, it was a very naive experience. But yeah, and then we were not able to pay them. And then he said, okay, we don't have any money. And the investors backed out because they like, market is not good and all that.
Yeah, so then the investor got up. Did you end up getting rid of people? That must have been a hard thing to do.
So at that time, it's been 3 months actually since I joined. Let me remember what exactly happened. So he didn't have money. He was not willing to fire people. He was like willing to take projects from clients on his own and generate the revenue for the salary. But I knew it, that it was not going to happen, because we had a team of 8 people and we had almost zero revenue. Mm-hmm. So, but he was very optimist, and I didn't trust him. So I decided to resign, and I told everybody that I don't believe in this guy. I don't believe that we can make money. Mm-hmm. So I'm resigning and you should resign too. Mm. So everybody followed me. Everybody resigned. The company, so he shut it down and he went underground. I don't know what happened.
What did you do right after resigning?
So I had learned how to get projects because I had been doing freelancing when I was a student. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, if my friend can do it, I can also do it. And I will not make the same mistake. I will not hire people immediately. I will not rely on investors. So that was my goal. I will not I took note of every mistake we made and I decided not to repeat them. So I went back to freelancing. I found a UK based company, Rounded Labs. And so I made a deal. I did a project.
Munir, before you go to Rounded Labs, Rounded Labs was late 2010, right? And
It was 2009, actually.
2009. So this was right after you quit your
full-time. Actually, it was 2008. It was 2008.
Okay.
Right after.
Just 3 months after. Called Rounded Labs. It was just you doing some freelancing work. Is that right?
Yeah. That's true. It was actually called Sukuto Labs. Mm-hmm. And they had a huge project by Sony. So they were making some application for Sony, and it was a very complex project for mobile. They didn't have resources to finish the project. So I got referred to them, and I finished the project in record time, in 2 weeks.
How did you get referred to them?
Through a friend, that friend was working full time for them. So I did a project for two weeks, and it was actually a project on Microsoft technology, and I had expertise in that.
What did you do for them? Do you remember?
Yeah. I was building similar thing. I was building a middleware on backend to connect to different APIs with their mobile client.
I see.
I remember. It was an ATP, the tennis application, official application for the UK. So yeah, that was it.
What is it? Tennis application? What do you mean?
ATP. There's some organization. I'm not into tennis, but yeah. So it was an official application for some tennis tournament.
Oh, the tennis tournament. I see.
Yeah, they had a deadline of 2 weeks, and we had to work on the middleware, the server side, and I was the guy who was doing it.
At this time, you were the only one who was sitting in your basement and coding it, right?
Yeah, I was actually, before getting this client, I actually bought the, I got the office. Mm-hmm. I was so ambitious. I was like, okay, this is what happened. I got a project from a website from a local company. So they wanted to make a website. I took advance payment from them and I paid for the advance payment for my office. It was a very small, tiny office. Mm-hmm. And I hired some freelancers. I hired some interns. And got the thing done, and I got some more money. And my goal was to have 6 months of my expenses, especially my expenses for my family. Mm-hmm. So that was my goal. And then I found this client, and they gave me this task, and it was a good money.
Mm-hmm. What was it?
I think this project, they gave me for 2 weeks, they gave me, I think, $2,000 or something. And it was a lot for Pakistan.
Oh, yeah. $2,000 at that time was probably 2 lakh. It was 2 lakh Indian rupees. I don't know what it was in Pakistani rupees.
Similar. Yeah. In today's money, it's 2 lakh rupees.
I see.
So at that time, it would be more actually because dollar was cheaper at that time.
I see.
Now it's more expensive. Yeah.
When did you hire your first full-time employee?
So they, after finishing this project, they were, I think they were impressed. That's why they offered me full-time job, just like my friend, because he was working full-time. So they said, okay, we need you to work full-time. And they offered me a good salary. It was similar to my salary in Bahrain.
Yeah, $2,500 to $3,000 per month.
Actually, it was a bit less because I was paying more rent in Bahrain. So they adjusted it somehow because they knew my previous salary. Uh-huh. So I think it was probably $1,500 because I was paying a lot of rent in Middle East, and I didn't have to pay rent in Pakistan because I was living with my parents. So yeah, they offered me a full-time job, but I made a deal. I said, okay, why do you want me to join you full-time? So that we have these projects. I said, what if I get you all the projects done, but I'm not your full-time employee and you won't control my time, but I will get things done and you should not care. Mm-hmm. So they were scared. They had very big clients like Next Clothing and Microsoft and all that. Mm-hmm. And they were scared. They said, but I showed them. I said, okay, let's do a trial for like 1 month. If it doesn't work, it's okay. You don't have to pay even. So I didn't charge them for next 3 months because I trusted them. So we did it, and we had an agreement that they will pay me for the projects, and they won't control my time. They won't know like who is doing it because I was responsible for getting it done. So that's how I did. So I didn't hire people. I hired interns for like 1 year.
Yeah. Why were you hiring interns? Because they're cheaper, they're more quality. Like, what is the strategy behind hiring interns?
Yeah, at that time I was in a survival mode. So mm-hmm. My goal was to save as much money as possible. Mm-hmm. And also, interns are very, like, they produce the same quality of work, and they are really hardworking mm-hmm. people. So yeah, yes, money was an issue initially. And then the motivation and the hard working.
And you are not even getting paid ahead of time. And the deal was to get paid on closure. So I'm guessing you didn't have upfront money to pay them.
So it was linked with their own payment. So it was a very complex. So we had like payment delays for like 6 months. And one time it was like 1 year. Wow. I was very, So once I achieved this safety net, so once I had the money in bank account for next 6 to 12 months, I was very chill. I was not worried about collecting invoices, and that was a big mistake. I learned it the hard way later in life. But
when did you reach the stage? By late 2010?
Which stage?
The stage of having 6 months in the bank.
I think it was like in first couple of months.
First couple of months.
You started. That was the number one goal, because I was worried about my family. I was worried about not repeating the same mistake. I didn't want to hire people and fire them. Mm-hmm. So that in first couple of months,
So by 2009, you had this already. And so the whole of 2009 and 10, you were more chilled out about not collecting. And not collecting.
It was my life changed, because I was able to buy things which I wanted without even seeing the price. Like, there was we had a very poor background. Like, we didn't have money to buy a bicycle or laptop. And it was the first time I saw the money after Bahrain. Of course, life was good in Bahrain, but it was a job. Mm-hmm. And in 2009, I was like a free guy. I was like, I can buy anything. I can eat wherever I want. And I can eat like KFC, which was a big deal. Like in Pakistan, it's like a $5 meal. It was a big deal. And I was like, I was partying. Not partying, but I was very happy in 2009. It was a good year.
It was a good year.
Yeah.
What was your... tell us about your first full-time hire, your CTO.
Yeah. Oh, yes. So he was an intern. He interned for a long time, and we did many projects together. And then when he was graduating in 2010, before hiring him, I was very frustrated in life generally. I was working, I was saving money, making money. I had enough, like more than enough savings to support my family. And then I had an invitation by Microsoft to attend their annual conference in Seattle. And I was very excited about, like, generally, I traveled before that, but getting an American visit visa first time, it was a very happy moment. And when I visited America first time, I visited Chicago, I visited, I even went to Las Vegas. And I said, wow, this country is amazing. For some reason, something was different, because I traveled mostly in Middle East and Singapore, but America was different. I got a very different vibe from the people, from the environment. And I didn't know, but at that time, it kind of like, I wanted to move here. Mm-hmm. But I didn't internalize this thought. So, and when I came back, after spending 1 month partying in America, I went back to Pakistan and went back to work. I didn't enjoy my life. I went to depression, actually. Mm. I was like, something is wrong. What am I doing? I had an office, but I had no employees. I was working with interns all the time. I was making money, but life was meaningless, suddenly. It was the same thing when I, I don't want to discuss, but when I like I had, okay, I don't want to discuss that, but yeah, I went into depression.
I think you should talk about it. What is it? Because so many people talk about their good times, but very few talk about their bad times, and everyone is going through it.
Oh, okay. So I had some strong religious beliefs when I was in 2005 or something. And when I decided to like travel and I visited Spain mm-hmm. when I was a student mm-hmm. and that changed my mind, changed my views about religion. Mm-hmm. And that was a very depressing time, because suddenly I didn't have a meaning in my life. I was linking my purpose of life and meaning of life with the religion at that time. And then suddenly things changed. And I felt the same thing after coming back from America. And I was like, okay, what do I do with my life? And but in reality, now I realize that I actually wanted to enjoy more of this American life. So, and then I attended. So I was kind of depressed. I was working, but not enjoying a lot. And then I attended a motivational talk by a local speaker. I think his name was Abbas Sen. He's like a very mini micro, not mini, micro or nano version of Tony Robbins, you can say. Do you know Tony Robbins?
Yes, of course. Yes, I do.
Yeah, so he was a motivational speaker, and this was the first time I was hearing some like a positive talk or something, and I was very inspired. I was like, okay, my purpose of life is to do something scary, and like things were like that. I was like, okay, why did I start this company? I started this company to build a company, but I was not making a company. I was so scared. I was always in survival mode. I was always like trying to save money and like hiring interns all the time and not hiring. So at that time, I decided to take risk. And enjoy my life. So I decided to have a bigger office and hire a full-time guy. So, and he, my CTO, he was the first hire. So I, and it was really hard to hire him.
Why was it hard? It was something about the, your CTO Amir's family not approving it, right?
Yes, exactly. So it's hard because his family didn't approve easily because he had an offer from big companies. And he had a very similar background, similar financial situation. I totally understood why he was not willing to, why he was reluctant. So I what I did, actually, I got a big office for him. Just to show his dad that I have money. It can be a good company. And I showed him the contracts from Microsoft that, okay, we have this big contracts and your son is going to be a CTO of a big company. And I was, it was a really hard time. Like, I met him like, four times or something like that.
This is something very cultural, right? It might be hard for your American friends to understand, for example, why would someone's family approve of someone's company? But I can totally relate to that. It may be, it could be important in some cultures, and looks like Pakistan is also one of them.
Yes. And because of the financial reasons, I think. I understand their insecurity. I was insecure in the same way when I didn't have money. Yeah. So I totally understand. So it was hard to convince them. But I showed them that I have money to pay for 1 year. Even if we don't earn anything, I can pay your son for 1 year. So you should not be worried. I have money to buy this good office. And it was a good office, like in a very good area, like center of this downtown, like business area. So I invested some money. I could have bought the car for me. I didn't have a car. But I decided to invest in company. Then on my own. So I was using auto rickshaw all the time. So, yeah.
Your first major customer, Windows 7. How did you get them?
Windows Phone 7, yes.
Or Microsoft, rather. Microsoft is the customer. Windows is the platform you worked on. How do you get Microsoft as a customer?
So I was very active in Microsoft development community when I was a student. I was selected as a from Microsoft of student ambassador in the campus, and that's why I got invited to Spain. And that changed a lot of things in my life, by the way. First traveling experience when I was a student. So yeah, I started to make connections at Microsoft, and when I graduated, I became more active in Microsoft development community. I was evangelizing their development tools, and they gave me an award called Microsoft Most Valuable Professional MVP. So I was invited to Microsoft. In 2010, which I just mentioned, and there I made more connections, and I finally, with some connections and agencies, I was able to secure this huge project because they were launching Windows Phone 7 to compete with iPhone, and we were selected as one of the preferred vendor to build apps for their partners.
I see. So what was the contract? Was just you're the preferred vendor, and the revenue that you generate out of it is how many of our partners will sign up with you guys. That has nothing to do with Microsoft. Is that right?
No. So it was like Microsoft was shortlisting their vendors, and they were connecting us with their partners.
I see.
So Microsoft was playing a bridge role. So they connected with partners like Singapore Airport, Changi Airport, for example. So we built an app for them as well. So
throughout 2011, you built several apps for many of the Microsoft partners. Do you remember what was the range of revenue that you made in 2011?
So my goal, when I, after this depressing time in 2010, I decided to build a real company. So that the I wrote down the vision. I was like, okay, this mobile development is a big thing, and I will be the one of the best companies in Karachi to develop mobile apps. So that was my vision, and that was the thing why people joined us. Mm-hmm. And my growth. So this is something very important. Your achievements, your level of success will not exceed of your expectations. Like what you plan is exactly what you get. There's no such thing as luck, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't know this. So I planned 100% growth every year. So I when I hired my CTO, I told his dad that we're going to double our team size every year. Mm-hmm. And we did exactly that for next 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's so magical. not less, not more. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that was my goal, to double the revenue, double the team size, and double the customer base every year. And we did that.
So what was it in 2011, the whole year?
2011 was not a lot. I think it was like probably less than around like 5 to 10K per month, 2011.
Yeah, 5 to 10K per month of revenue.
And we had like, so I hired my first guy, CTO. We were two people in 2010. We were four people in 11. Mm-hmm. So four people and like this much revenue.
I see. Yeah. In 2012, tell us about the time when you lost 50% of your monthly revenue.
Yes, so that was so this UK guy, UK client, they were still like one of our big customers. Actually, they were the biggest customer we had, and they went into some financial issues. Their clients went into some financial issues. So I decided to meet them because things were not going well. So I said, okay, how about I make a trip to UK and meet them and see how things are, right? That's the best way to solve things. So I traveled to UK first time. It was awesome. Like, I'm glad I did it. I met them and I realized, okay, it's not that they are not happy with me. It's, mm-hmm. They are really in trouble financially. Mm-hmm. And that was very hard to, I could see that my revenue will cut in half in next 3 months. Mm-hmm. It was so obvious.
So they didn't directly pull the plug. They said they're going to pull the plug in 3 months. So
their plug was being pulled by some other
customer. Got it. But they gave you a heads up that in 3 months.
Yeah, but no, they didn't give me the heads up. Actually, I saw the patterns. Like I saw how things are. So I was always in survival mode. So yeah, I was always like inquiring, like, what's going to happen next 3 months? What's going to happen next 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. And when I asked them what's going to happen in the next 6 months, they didn't have an answer. And I got worried, okay, something is wrong. So I decided to travel, meet them, meet their clients. And I said, okay, things are not going well for them for some reasons. So yeah, I mean, then I was very worried. And after UK, my US trip was planned. So I decided to make the most out of the US thing. I refined my pitch. I decided to meet a lot of people.
So you were coming to US to sign more clients or find more clients?
Primarily, I was coming to US to attend the Microsoft Summit. Summit every year. But I was coming here like mostly not to business development before this incident. Mm-hmm. I was just coming here to enjoy America, mm-hmm. to be honest. But at that point, I realized that I need to do something because my clients, I will lose my revenue. Mm-hmm. So while in UK, I refined my pitch, I made a new deck. I decided, I cold emailed so many people and scheduled the meetings, and I went and I secured so many big projects.
But before you secured the big projects, what was the size of your team at this time?
So we were doubling every year.
So you were at like 12, 20 people or so in 2012.
No. So in 2014, that was a peak of my company. We were 25.
Oh, got it. So in 2012, it was much lesser than that. So you also talked about the time when you gained 40 pounds. Is this the year when it happened?
No. It happened in, I think, 2013 or 14.
2013. Tell us about it. What happened?
Yes. So yeah, I secured big projects and I went back and I hired like 8, 10 people. So we were like around 10 people, and then suddenly we became 20-ish, 18 or 20, right? And that was fun because my revenue was doubled, mm-hmm. and I was happy, but that was not fun in terms of management. I didn't know how to manage people, and it was really, 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 really hard. Mm-hmm. Once we crossed like 15 people or 20 people, things are really hard. You know, you have to learn management. I was like, okay, if you hire smart people, they don't need management. That was my theory. And I will only hire smart people. They don't need management. They will self-manage and things like that. But things were not going well. And there was a obvious crisis in the company. There was like obvious chaos in the company. And then
there was friction between different programmers and designers, you said.
Yeah, right? Mostly between programmers and designers. they think very differently. Mm-hmm. And there was no process. So there were huge conflicts. And I was sad all the time because I was always in the peacemaking mode. I was always trying to make peace between different teams and like trying to be diplomatic all the time. And it was not a good time. We were not meeting deadlines properly because of all the issues, no processes. And I was working almost all the time. Like I was sleeping hardly like 4 or 5 hours a day, a night, and eating. So food was the only entertainment I had. I had no girlfriend at that time. So food was the only entertainment. And I was eating all the time, and healthy food. And I gained a lot of weight, probably like 35 or 40 pounds.
You attended an entrepreneur class in Draper University.
Yes.
Right? And we changed your mindset about how to build companies.
That changed everything.
What did you learn there?
My internal company was in chaos. And then I was looking for an answer. I was frustrated. I got to solve this problem. I didn't know the answer was in management, learning management. I was still like believing that management is not the solution. More management means more chaos. That was my belief at that time. So I decided to travel one of my friends, he told me about this Draper University program. By the way, I was making a lot of money at that time. So financially, we were perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. Our clients, customers were happy.
So it was more than $20,000 per month?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, things were good. And then I came to Silicon Valley. I've been here before, but this was the first time I was here properly. Like, I was living in the Silicon Valley. So I attended this 2 month program. It's an entrepreneurial training. It's a really interesting program by Tim Draper. So they teach entrepreneur. They make you a hero. So they call it like university for superheroes. I learned that how to build a scalable business, and more than that, how to build a meaningful business. And I realized that the business I was in was not meaningful. We were working with clients. It was good, but we were not changing the world. We were not making any impact. And fundamentally, my business was a services business, and it's really hard to scale a services business. So I put all my blames, even though I was bad in management at that time, I put all the blame to nature of my business. I said, okay, the business is not good fundamentally. It's not like I don't know how to run a business. Like, business was not good fundamentally. So at that point, I decided to make a change. I said, okay, now future is the products. I think I should make some meaningful products and transform my company from services to a product-based business. So that was my...
Build products out of your existing business, or you wanted to start a product business on the side along with the services business?
I had no idea, but I was open for experiments.
And is this the time when you built the game called Candy Pot for the conference?
Actually, it was before that. It was 2012.
So what products did you build after you decided to make this change?
So we didn't build anything. I was hiring people. I started a new business on the side. So we were actually trying to build remote teams for our customers. So that was a new business idea I had. And I was doing lots of technical recruiting for my customers because I got very good at it. I was able to hire really smart people for my own company. So I said, okay, I can use this skill set. And we had some internal tools to speed up the hiring process. So I was trying to come up with a new services idea to help my customers to hire more people efficiently, faster, and remotely.
What were a couple of things that you would do to hire better quality people? Can you talk about one or two of things that you
do? Okay, so the secret was the best programmers I hired in my company were they were the winners of the programming competitions. So That was a big thing. So I decided to apply the same principles of the competitive programming in my hiring process. And we built this internal tool. I think it was 2011 or 12, I think.
So the tool, what would it do? Would it have a competition among different people who apply for your for the job?
Yes. So we would like arrange different programming competition online and invite people to compete. And if they perform well, they will get interview offers.
I see.
So it was kind of a way to pre-screen people automatically based on their technical skills.
That's very interesting.
So I was doing on the side and it was making money. But more than that, it was a good experiment. So we were refining our tool. And after attending this Draper University, I said, okay, this product has a potential to have a like have a potential to become a product business. But it took me a long time to transform the company because we had 25 people. My revenue was good. And it was not easy to just like switch it. Because there was a momentum going on. Like we had like, and we were hiring people more hiring people. We were getting more and more projects from the customers. So it was a weird time. Like I was not sure. I didn't see the future, long-term future in the services company, but I had a huge liability of existing customers, existing employees.
This is when the perfect opportunity came about and one customer approached you to buy the company?
Actually, yes. So that was a good thing. It happened in end of 14, I think. So one of our customers, they decided to build their own dev center in Pakistan. And so they approached me and we had a long discussion for like many months. And finally, I decided to let go and have a good exit from my standard, relatively good exit, and have an exit and start building a new company.
So what was the revenue at the time of this exit?
It was good. It was, I think, between 30 and 50K per month.
30 and 50K per month. That's a huge company, especially being based out of Pakistan.
Yeah, it was not easy decision. It's like leaving a job which pays you $1 million, like that.
So when you, how do you celebrate the exit?
I never celebrated. I think it was a hard time because of the management issues, and it was emotionally very hard because this was my first company and it was my baby. So I was not willing to let it go. I was emotionally attached. Even though I had an opportunity, but so I didn't celebrate. Actually, I was very sad.
But you were the sole proprietor for the company, right? You had 100% control, and there was
I was 100% owner. Yeah, but still, I didn't never celebrate it.
Oh wow!
I'm celebrating now.
Yeah, you're celebrating now. You should. I should teach you how to party.
I know it already, but
No, I'm just pulling your leg. But this is when so your product idea, which we came into your current company now, we just briefly touched on it. So you had this idea for remotely hiring, which you wanted to pursue full time at this time, right? How at this time you were in Pakistan, but now you are in the US. How did you end up here?
Right. So we sold the contracts, we sold the team, that's not the right way, like we transferred the team, and they all, like, nobody got fired, everybody got the promotions, everybody got the appraisals and the salaries, they got into a better office, better than my office, so that was a good thing, but we retained all the intellectual property we had, including all the games we made, including this recruiting platform we had, so we retained all the intellectual property. And then I decided, I saw the potential in this project, in this product. And I decided to launch the product on its own. So we showed this product to some customers. They loved it. And then I said, okay, this can make money. So we launched a paid model. We got our first customer. And actually, I made some good relationship with Tim Draper at Draper University. He was aware of the, like, he knew about my previous company. He knew when we launched our first product. So I met him, and then he showed interest in investing. And I didn't need money because I had savings and all. But I think it was a good. I decided to take investment because it would give me responsibility and a push to build a real company.
And also that, network of your investors.
And also, yeah. And I wanted to, then at that point, I realized that I really want to move to America. Mm. Yeah, I was like, okay, this is where I want to live my life. After attending Draper University, I said, okay, this is the place to be in. Like, the people are amazing. There's so much innovation. And so I decided
was it, to move. When you decided to move to America, was it easy to get a working permit here and work in the US?
No, that was the hardest part, actually. So I only had B1 visa, green card, the visit visa. And
visit visa will let you work only for 6 months out of a year.
It won't let you work at all. It will only let you visit and meet people. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't allow me. So I was not working. I was not being productive. I was not earning any salary. I'm still not earning any salary from this company. So I raised some money. I hired some people in Pakistan. I built this product more. I started generating revenue. Actually, we were generating revenue already. Mm-hmm. So I grew the revenue. And then, eventually I figured out the visa issue. And last month, I got the approval for the I-140.
Yeah. Are you okay to talk about how you did it?
Yeah. So there's a category for the green card. It's called EB1A. Mm-hmm. It's a green card for extraordinary people. I'm not an extraordinary person, but they think I am. But yeah, so there's a good visa option for smart people.
There was a lawyer earlier, a couple of weeks ago, who talked about some of these visa classes. I'll also link to that in the show notes. But you are one of the first few people who has been on a EB1 visa and successfully started their company. So that's a success story with US visa system.
No, actually, it's a good visa, and I think people have been using it for a while.
Yeah.
I'm not the first one, but I didn't know about this visa. Oh, the more popular visa is O-1 visa.
Yeah.
It has a similar criteria, but I think it has less scrutiny. Mm-hmm. And it gives you the visa. It doesn't give you the green card.
Yeah.
So mine, I got the approval for the 140, and I'm still waiting for the actual green card. It's approved, but it's still in the process. So, yeah.
What is your revenue for this year from remote?
I'm not sure if I can disclose. It's a private company. We are private investors, so I cannot disclose. But we have more than 100 or around 150 paying clients.
More than 150 paying clients. And what is the charging model? Do you charge by engagement, or do you charge by the number of people hired?
So we provide the platform to screen candidates. Mm-hmm. So they save a lot of time because they don't have to rely on resumes or phone screening. So they only interview when they know the candidate is good. So we do the automatic testing for the programmers. And fundamentally, we charge by volume. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the number of open positions, number of people you screen.
So how do you attract good developers to come on your platform?
So we don't do the sourcing. We provide the screening platform.
I see. And so the companies have to do their own. Customers,
they use their own sourcing channels, and they use our platform as a filter, as a firewall. Hmm.
What is next for a remote interview and yourself, Munir? In the next 1 to 2 years, how do you see yourself growing?
Sure. So market is big, and I think we are growing our customer base, and we are coming with different ideas for this product. Mm-hmm. And for myself, I think I'm still realizing that, okay, I'm an American resident now. I will be very soon. Officially, I'm not allowed to say that because till I get the green card.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's an amazing country, and I'm enjoying my freedom these days, working. And we are very lean. We are a very small team, and we work remotely mostly. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited to grow this company more and hire more people and not repeat the same mistakes I did in my last company and build a really good, better and bigger company.
What so advice do you have like for others who are just starting out?
I see a lot of people who jump into entrepreneurship without any experience, which is not fundamentally a bad thing, but I think it's better. You can improve the probability of your success if you get some experience in your domain, especially in the domain. Mm-hmm. So I would advise them to work in a similar, in a startup, in a similar space for a while before starting their own company. It will really help them. It's not like they won't be able to do it if they don't do it, but it will really help them
understand the
customer, understand the market, and understand the needs of the customer.
If anyone who is listening to us wants to reach out to you, what is the best way for them to do so?
My profile is very public, actually, which is something interesting. Like, I realize that Americans don't share a lot on social media, but unlike Pakistanis, I was promoting my last company all the time on my. That's why I was able to hire a lot of good, smart people. Mm-hmm. And here, people don't share a lot on Facebook and social media. But I'm very, very public. You can approach me on LinkedIn. And for your audience, they can email me as well. It's Munir, M-U-N-I-R, at remoteinterview.io.
I will include your email also in the show notes as well. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you really wanted to share?
Yeah. So I think since your audience, you're targeting immigrants, mm-hmm. right? And I'm assuming that the majority of your audience is in South Asia. Mm-hmm. Right, I think they should really challenge this idea of a collective society or joint family system. I think it's not healthy. Mm-hmm. I think we all should live alone for a while. Like when we grow up, we should move out. Mm-hmm. We should live alone. We should experience a life on our own, and it will help us get stronger, more independent,
build a different perspective.
Yeah, and travel.
Yeah. Like it did for you in 2005 when you moved out of your home.
Exactly, it changed my life. When I saw Spain, like I said, okay, there is a world outside Pakistan. I mean, there are so many good things about Pakistan, but there is a whole world outside Pakistan. And same with Indians. Like there are so many different cultures, and you learn a lot, and get more exposure, challenge your traditions, challenge your beliefs. Mm. Like there is a reality. Like there are so many realities in life. Mm-hmm. It's not one with you're born with. Or your parents believe in, right?
So
and read books, study the successful people, and mm-hmm. listen to your podcast. There are so many successful people on your podcast, and learn from something and do something. You know, life is all about doing something interesting.
Thanks, Munir. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Okay, no problem. Thanks, Rohit, for inviting me.
Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingtheborders.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingtheborders.com. Thanks again, and have an amazing day.